You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everybody, welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's five AL East beat reporters. Taking a look at the Orioles offense, getting a Matt Wieters update and checking in on what's going on with Bud Norris. Be asking what's up with the Red Sox lineup and taking a look at whether that rotation is starting to round into form a little bit. We're looking at Masahiro Tanaka's rehab and Jacoby Ellsbury's injury situation, as well as checking in on Stephen Drew one more time when we talk Yankees. With the Rays, we're looking at what's going on with this slump and whether the situation there is half empty or half full. And with the Blue Jays, we'll be taking a look at the rotation and getting some injury updates. Ian, of all the things that we thought could have gone wrong with this club, I think there was reason to worry about the rotation. I think if you wanted to worry about the bullpen, you certainly could have. I think even if you really wanted to worry about the defense in some spots, you could have. I think the one thing that nobody really worried about was whether this team would hit, and this team is not hitting. Why is this team not hitting? What's going on?
Yeah, there's just too many different guys who aren't hitting. I mean, you just go around. I mean, Ortiz is just off to, frankly, a pretty terrible start. You know, nobody could have quite seen that coming. Napoli wasn't doing anything until about a week ago. Now he's back. Mookie, you kind of thought you were going to get more out of him. Hanley Ramirez was an MVP candidate in the first month of the season, but he's done absolutely nothing in May. I mean, I think he has one RBI for the month, and he's just, not getting around on the ball since he came back from that shoulder injury. You know, I think Pablo Sandoval is pretty much what you thought he was going to be. You've got nothing in right field. You lost both your catchers, practically before the season even started, so that hasn't helped. So I think it's just a combination. I think Pedroia and Pablo Sandoval are pretty much the two guys in that lineup who, I would think they've pretty much given you what you expected, but the other guys across the board haven't really given you enough.
What is the status of one of the guys they brought up to try and help that, Ruznay Castillo?
Yeah, we'll know later today. It seems like right now a little shoulder discomfort after making a great diving play the other night. And this has been the frustrating thing with Ruznay. Every time you start to see something good from him, he gets a little bit of a nagging injury. And to me, it's just kind of – the guy plays hard. And he a little bit like Shane Victorino, he's not shy about going into a wall or getting his uniform dirty, but it just seems like he's having a hard time absorbing these blows. So that's a tough thing right now. Right now it looks like just a little nagging thing, so hopefully you can finally, you still haven't gotten an extended look at this guy. It's been 5 or 6 days here, 5 or 6 days there, something crops up, so we don't yet know quite what they have with Ruznay Castillo.
A year ago, now I realize it's not a direct parallel. I realize, for one thing, there is a difference between what Jackie Bradley Jr. did on offense a year ago and what Mookie Betts is doing on offense now. But by about this time last year, people were howling. Why? What's going on? Why are they still running this guy out there? Is there that worry at this point? Is there any talk about what they can do about Mookie Betts, who's been fine with the bat but not the kind of thing I think they hoped for? Where are they at with him?
Yeah, no, I don't think they're ready to give up yet. I mean, I think there is a difference with Bradley, because Bradley not only had a bad batting average last year, but he just looked, overmatched at the plate. Where, Betts, he makes good outs, I mean, he's hitting the ball hard, he hits the ball kind of at people, he has pretty good at bats for the most part, but he's just not getting the results. I think ideally what you'd like to do with Mookie Betts is move him down in the batting order, hit him seventh or something like that, but there's simply too many other guys struggling in the lineup to be able to do that right now. But if you could ever move a Bogarts, who's shown signs of hitting lately, if you could ever move him up to second and make Betts sixth or seventh, I think that would take a little more pressure on him, so that might be something to look at. But no, I think they still feel pretty good about Mookie Betts. He's just one of those guys where, if more people were producing, it wouldn't be as big a deal that, that he's not hitting like you hopes he would.
You mentioned Ortiz a little earlier. I've asked about him recently, but he it's still not there. It's still too early to worry too much, but are we getting to that point where it's time to worry about David Ortiz?
Yeah, I mean, I think much like we were talking about Koji earlier in the year, when you put that 39 or 40 at the beginning of a sentence to the guy, it's fair to wonder, to Koji's credit. I think we all hit the panic button a little early this year, and he's been fine. And now they need David Ortiz to do the same thing because, you know, he just doesn't look like the same David Ortiz. I mean, he's just not hitting the ball with authority, a lot of that kind of slow rollers, a lot of ground balls, you know, right into that shift, and just not playing with a lot of life right now. And to me, that is very concerning about David Ortiz. So, yeah, until he starts showing you with one of those hot streaks that he's been known for in his career, you know, you're going to worry about him because, look, this team is not going to the playoffs without David Ortiz hitting at a high level. I think that's pretty clear.
We've talked a lot about the rotation as a group and sort of as a mass of five guys, but it seems like there's starting to be some differentiation. You know, Rick Porcello has had a rough one, but I think there's reason to be encouraged. Clay Buchholz, I think there's reason to be encouraged. Joe Kelly, I'm still not seeing the reasons to be encouraged. When you look at them as a group, do you think it's fair to say that at least the kind of top two or three spots are kind of rounding into form, and the questions are now still at the back?
Yeah, I mean, right now I think you feel good about Buchholz because he's had four good starts in a row, and as soon as he starts to pitch well, the offense goes completely south on him. You know, he's 2-6, and meanwhile, he shaved his ERA down almost two runs in his last four or five starts. So you feel good about Clay. Feel reasonably good about Porcello, although he's had one bad inning in both of his last two starts. And Wade Miley, this is a guy who's not getting the credit he deserves. He's put together four or five really good starts in a row. So now we're seeing why the Red Sox traded those two arms for him. But, yeah, Joe Kelly, I think we're getting close to the point where maybe you have to look at the bullpen for him if he doesn't, you know, really straighten it out here. It just continues to mystify two pitching coaches now this season why a guy with that kind of stuff can't get better results. Steven Wright, been a pleasant surprise since he came into the rotation. I mean, he's kept you in the game twice. Justin Masterson probably still a week or two away from coming back, but just it's going to be fascinating to see Eduardo Rodriguez. You know, they bring him up not to have him fill somebody's rotation spot, but just, I think, to give them a glimpse of, is he ready? I mean, this is really kind of like giving them a free look at Eduardo Rodriguez, what they're seeing when he takes the ball in Texas.
Yeah, and I there's kind of two pieces there, and the first is what kind of opportunity do you think Rodriguez has? I mean, I wouldn't expect they necessarily slot him in right now, but is there a scenario where he pitches well enough to sort of start making those decisions more difficult?
Yeah, and I think that's what they're doing here. The Red Sox are in a stretch of 20 games in 20 days, so they say, you know, what a great chance to get Eduardo Rodriguez sort of a sneak preview here and see what we have, see if this is a guy we can rely on later in the summer, because I think, you know, there's two guys the Red Sox are close to the end of the rope with here in the rotation. That's Kelly and that's Justin Masterson once he gets back. So, you know, what they're trying to do is line up that pref chart right. You know, if they pull the plug on Kelly or Masterson, I mean, obviously you have Bright right now, but who's the other guy that you go to? Is it Brian Johnson? Is it, Eduardo Rodriguez? I think Eduardo Rodriguez certainly has the best upside of the entire group of young pitchers they have. So, I think they'd love to believe that he's ready to help, and he'll be ready by the middle of the summer here, and I think that's what they're doing by giving him this sort of cameo start in the rotation.
And then the other half of that is it as simple as when Masterson shows he's healthy, gets a start or two, he's back in the rotation, or is his spot in any question now, or is he still going to have another few chances when he comes back off the DL?
Yeah, I think they've committed with Justin Masterson that, look, we're going to shut him down for a couple weeks and see if we can get him right again and give him another chance. I don't think that they view that it will be fair to just pull the plug on him entirely here. So I think that you will see him make, but I do think he's going to be on somewhat of a short leash when he comes back. You know, the Red Sox aren't in a position where they can play bad baseball for very much longer. You know, they really need to get on a little bit of a run here. So I think that you give Masterson one or two starts when he gets back, and you see if you can get him back to at least the way he was pitching very early in the season, if not a little bit better. And then, you know, you evaluate what you have with him.
Brian, Masahiro Tanaka threw another rehab start yesterday. The results were not great, but I wasn't there, and I don't believe in scouting the stats unless you have to. What did you hear about how he looked and how he felt?
Yeah, I wasn't in Pawtucket either, but what I did hear was fastball was a little below where you'd want it to be, and I think that this is going to be a problem with Tanaka. I think maybe not a problem, but an issue going forward. Look, he's pitching with a partial tear in his ligaments. It's going to, there are going to be good days and bad days, but I think he has shown enough that if I were the Yankees, I wouldn't feel too hesitant toward bringing him up to the major league level and letting him get that next step there. I think he's going to throw 85 to 90 pitches next time out. You might as well do that on a big league mound. You're paying this guy a lot of money. He is a big part of your plans for this year, next year, going forward. I would rather see him at the major league level and give him a shot there. I think there's a certain adrenaline that can jump up, and maybe you see the performance jump. But I'd want to know what I have, and there's no better place to do that than at the big league level. So I think if I were them, I'd bring him up.
Do you get the impression that Mr. Cashman and Mr. Girardi share your point of view on that matter?
I think that it's something they're going to talk about. I think they obviously scouted that game a lot better than we did. It just, you know, I'm looking at a stat line here and going off what I'm reading in the newspapers. But I think that it's something that's certainly in consideration. I think that if Adam Warren had not pitched a great game his last time out, it would certainly be more in consideration. But when you have a chance to put Tanaka on a big league mound, I think that why not? I think it's certainly something you have to entertain.
Will it be as simple as, whenever that time comes, will it be as simple as Warren back to the bullpen, or are there creative options that they're looking at as far as how to align the rotation whenever the time comes that they decide that Tanaka's back in?
Yeah, I don't know if it's that simple. You know, Chris Capuano hasn't blown anybody away, I don't feel like. And even though the Yankees did give him $5 million and said he would be at the back end of the rotation, I feel like at some point you have to look at results. And Adam Warren, the last couple of times out, has been fantastic. And I think that his stuff the last time out against Kansas City was probably the best he's ever seen at the big league level. You know, fastball popping in 94, you know, breaking stuff was biting. He was keeping guys off balance. And that Royals lineup is no joke. So I think that you have to take that in consideration. But I think that, by and large, at some point they're going to get Tanaka back, they're going to get Ivan Nova back, and at some point there's just not enough spots in that rotation, so you probably have to go with one of those guys to the bullpen. And that might not work in Adam Warren's favor. I know he would prefer to be a starting pitcher, but I think he has proven, as have many before him, that you can help a team a lot coming out of the bullpen, especially as a starting pitcher where your stuff plays up rather than being in the rotation. So I think it's something they're definitely going to look at.
I hate this idea, but nobody asked me, and it was something that came up in Yankees conversations earlier in the year. Would they go with all six of those guys for a short period of time to protect anybody, or is that is that time passed?
You hate it, huh? Well, Larry Rothschild has talked about it. It's something that they would want to do if possible. They tried it a little bit. They didn't quite get there, but I think they're mindful of Tanaka. They're mindful that CC is nearing the end here. He's obviously clearly in the second half of his career. I think they want to be careful with his innings totals. They know that Michael Pineda has never thrown 200 in a big league season. So I think that there's a bunch of reasons why you would want to slot in a six starter, but as far as carrying six starters and going several times through the rotation, having six guys, I don't think they're ready to do that just yet.
I guess that's kind of what I'm wondering. Is there maybe an interim transition period? You almost give Capuano and Warren another start or two to sort of audition to see who stays in or anything like that.
I think you could do that. You absolutely could. It's a situation. They had Chase Whitley up before, and obviously he's not having John surgery, but he would have been in that mix too. So I've never heard a major league manager or general manager say that we have too much starting pitching. I think that's the situation the Yankees are in. They're happy to have that wealth of riches that they think is coming around the corner. And if you can have a healthy Tanaka or a moderately healthy Tanaka come back and join an Ivan Nova who's coming back in the rotation, that's going to be huge for them down the stretch just to have those options.
The other major health concern here right now is Jacoby Ellsbury, and it came out recently this week that maybe that's going to be a little longer than was hoped. First of all, what exactly is your understanding of Ellsbury's situation? Are we looking at an extended period of time for him?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is it's not a situation where you're looking at surgery. So this is not something that should be season-ending for him at all. My understanding is it's a strain on the outside of his knee that he'll feel mostly when he makes quick turns. And obviously for a guy who's speed and legs are such a big part of his game, that's not really what you want to hear about your center fielder. So you want your center fielder to be able to make those fast breaks and those quick cuts and go chase down balls in the gaps. And it sounds like 15 days is not going to be enough for Ellsbury there. You hope it's 3 weeks, it may be a month, but Slade Heathcott's come up and done a pretty good job. I think he's impressed a lot of guys. I thought Yankee fans were going to like the way he plays all out, if it was anything like we saw in spring training. And so far, it has been. His first hit, he turned a single into a double and with no hesitation. But they're a better team with Ellsbury in the lineup, and there's no question about that. But you need a healthy Ellsbury to come back, because he's not going to be helping the team if he's playing at 65, 70%. You really want him to be as close to 100 as you can, as realistically can. And if there's any hesitation there, you have to take it slow. So I think 15 days not going to be enough. 21 days might not be enough. I think that you're probably looking closer to a month.
Is a combination of Chris Young and Carlos Beltran and Heathcott for those two outfield spots enough for them to make do for a few weeks, or are they maybe look at some other kind of external options?
I think they're okay, because remember, they have Brett Gardner, who is a bona fide leadoff hitter. There's no question there. I think that a big league lineup does not have any problem slotting Brett Gardner in the one spot. So he can get on base. He can be a pest. He's better when he's teamed with Ellsbury. The Yankees have certainly proved that. They led the majors in first inning runs when Ellsbury and Gardner were at the top. But I think they can get by. I think that Heathcott's going to do a little bit here. And Chris Young needs to get back where he was that first couple weeks of the season. He's gone in a little bit of a tailspin here. But I think they can get by with what they have and then wait for Ellsbury. I don't think it's going to be – if it was a different situation where Ellsbury was going to be out for 2-3 months, say, I think that maybe you'd be in favor of making a move. But I think they can do that from within for now.
And then to turn to a topic we've talked about a good bit, but that really hasn't gotten any better, the middle infield. It's kind of the same question, but it remains a question. What can they do? Are they getting closer to being able to call somebody up? Is this what, if anything, can they do aside from just wait for these guys to start hitting?
Yeah, I think you're nearing the end of that, where you can realistically say, all right, well, it's early still. It's not really early yet. So you've got now a year of Stephen Drew sample size to look at, and the results are not pretty. So I think that there, reading between the tea leaves, trying to anyway, with what Hal Steinbrenner said last week, he was down at the owners' conference meetings and said something along the lines of, Didi Gregorius, we believe in him. There's going to be a bright future ahead. We're willing to go with the growing pains. But then he said, Stephen Drew is what he is. And that is not a ringing vote of confidence in my estimation. So I think that the example I keep going to last year was that they knew Brian Roberts wasn't going to be their everyday second baseman, but he was okay for the time being. They stuck with him until the trade deadline when Drew became available. I think that the leash is getting a little bit shorter here. I know that Joe Girardi keeps talking about batted ball velocity and how the numbers just don't match up with what Stephen Drew has produced. But at some point, you got to look at the batting average. You look at the numbers on the board, and you say, they are what they are. And it's a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately game. And Drew's had some big hits. I'm thinking of the pinch hit Grand Slam. But I don't think it's happened often enough to guarantee him starting time going forward.
Please tell me you've gotten at least one inbox or Twitter question about A-Rod playing second base. Please tell me somebody's asked.
I did. I absolutely did. Somebody said something along the lines of, hey, he was a big league shortstop, so why can't he handle second base? You know, second base is easier than shortstop. So I'm not going to waste your time by answering that one. But, you know, if you need the answer, email me. I'll get back to you.
Gregor, it appears that one thing that this team desperately needed is starting to happen, which is Drew Hutchison is seemingly coming on. He's got 3 good starts out of 4. Now, I know he's been up and down this year and had good and bad, but this seems to be approaching a trend. What is different about him in these recent starts where things are going better for him?
Well, he really, a few starts ago, really started to get his fastball command kind of figured out. He was leaving a lot of pitches up in the zone early on in the season. It was just not looking like the guy that anybody really expected. I mean, there's a lot of kind of questionable pieces in that rotation, but he wasn't really considered one of them, even though he was you know, coming in with not a whole lot of experience into this year. But it really starts with fastball command that also has made his slider a lot more effective, and he's really looked like a completely different guy over the last four starts. I mean, his complete game earlier this week was really reminiscent of an outing he had last year in Texas when he was able to kind of accomplish the same thing. And, you know, those are the type of outings that they're going to need from him because, you know, he was the opening day starter for a reason. Even though this team, you know, doesn't have that bona fide ace, he's still someone who's been expected to kind of help lead things for those starters. And as they kind of turn around, it's no coincidence, in my opinion, that it's kind of happening around the same time that Hutchinson's kind of leading the way.
And I mean, elsewhere in that rotation, what else is there to sort of be excited about? What can a Jays fan kind of hang his or her hat on right now with this rotation beyond Hutchinson? Because it seems like Dickey is still struggling to find traction, and they're still kind of looking for the rest of it.
Yeah, and to me, the biggest wild card in all of this is still Aaron Sanchez, and that was the case going into the year, and it's still the case now. And, you know, he's been able to show some flashes. You know, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about the Blue Jays possibly moving him back to the bullpen. It was a suggestion that John Gibbons brought up, you know, as recently as a few weeks ago. But all that talk has really kind of gone away. And, you know, the big reason why is because, you know, he started to figure out command. And there's going to be some ups and downs along the way, especially with a starter as inexperienced as he is. He's not going to be flawless by any means. But the big encouraging thing is that, you know, he walked six guys, and then his next start he walked five, and then four, and then three, and then in his last out he got it down to two. So, you know, decreasing that each time out is really beneficial. I think a lot of it goes back to a change the Jays made behind the plate. They simply have Russell Martin setting up down the middle now as opposed to on the corners, and they're kind of letting the sinker, you know, have the movement on that and as opposed to trying to be too fine, and that's kind of helped him a little bit. But when you look at his upside, he's someone that the Blue Jays really need to get going, especially when some other people in the rotation, especially a guy like Dickey, is still really struggling to kind of figure things out.
Where are they with Dickey? I mean, he's such a big part of this. They're paying him a lot of money. They gave up a lot to get him. And even at his worst, presumably he gives innings. But so I guess I'm asking a question that I know the answer to, but is there anything they can do beyond just wait on him? Because if this guy's getting beat around every fifth day, it's a problem.
Yeah, and I don't think there really is much they can do. You know, I think Dickey for a while was at a loss for answers. He's been a little bit more positive over the last two outings. He did have a good start two outings ago, but the start against Chicago this week was another big setback for him. And, you know, the one encouraging thing for him after that game was that, you know, he did have that swing and miss knuckleball a little bit this week, and he certainly had it the start before, and that's something he didn't have all year until the last two outings. So that's one small, you know, piece of positive news he can take away from it. His line this week against Chicago looked a little bit worse than it actually was, and that's because he certainly didn't get any help in the field. There was a drop fly ball in the outfield. There was a few double plays that didn't get turned. It could have been a better outing for him. There wasn't all that much hard contact with the exception of, you know, a very poorly located fastball to Jose Abreu that kind of turned things in Chicago's favor for a while. So there are a few positive things, but the fact that, you know, we're still sitting here, you know, towards the end of May and he's got an ERA well over five, that's not where he envisioned himself at this time. It's certainly not where the Blue Jays envisioned himself being.
As they look for answers to get the rotation as a whole going, what's the word on Daniel Norris down in AAA as he tries to get back to the status that made him part of their season opening rotation?
Yeah, and Norris has been a tough one to figure out, and, you know, there's been some encouraging signs with him as well in AAA Buffalo, but the consistency hasn't quite been there, and for him, just like these other guys, I mean, I guess it's not a surprise, but it again comes back to command. I mean, he was a guy who, when he was in Toronto earlier this year, his pitch counts really ran up quite high early on in games. And even though the ERA was respectable because he was able to limit the damage of runners in scoring position, he just wasn't able to get deep into games at all. We've seen some signs of that in Buffalo, but then there's been also the really good outings as well. So he's someone who's going to have to put it together, you know, for three, four starts in a row for the Blue Jays to, I think, seriously take a look at him. And You know, right now there's not a spot for him that's open. You know, Marco Estrada would probably be the, you know, the obvious pick for a move back to the bullpen, but he's done enough so far after getting fully stretched out to secure his job for a little bit. So I don't think the Blue Jays are going to make a change soon. But, you know, if we get towards the end of June and Estrada's not doing well, or if he has a couple of rough starts, it could change in a hurry as well.
Let's talk injury updates, because that remains a story with this club. Jose Bautista had a huge night last night as we talk, and yet he's still limited. It looked optimistic. Now I don't know. What's his status as far as getting back to playing some defense again?
Well, you know, kind of as we touched on last week, you know, there's that end date where the Jays won't admit it and Bautista won't admit it. But I think that, you know, he's got to be able to play right field when the Blue Jays open up an interleague series on Monday in Washington, because, you know, it just doesn't make sense to keep him on the active roster for a, you know, for a really, really much longer than they've already gone if he's not able to play the field. You can, there's some off days coming up. You've got three games in Washington, so you can, you know, utilize that schedule a little bit to minimize the amount of games that he's missed. However, you know, Bautista thinks, you know, cautiously thinks that he's going to be able to play the field on Monday. You know, he's thrown three times this week now, so that's an encouraging sign after getting the cortisone shot to relieve some of the pain in that area. And, but really, I mean, this is, it's, if you would have asked me, you know, a month ago, I would have said he only would have been about a week before being able to get back into action in right field. So it's really a day-by-day situation, and they really kind of just have to wait and see how it feels. But at some point, I think over the next few days, we're going to get a clearer idea of exactly where he is, because I just don't think the Jays can allow it to go on too much longer unless they see some real progress.
And then what's the latest with Devin Travis?
And Travis, a little bit more encouraging. He took ground balls for the first time on Wednesday, and so he'll continue that over the next couple of days. The big test for him in that sore shoulder is going to be when he starts swinging, and that's something he hasn't done yet. But, you know, just talking with him on Wednesday morning, he was really encouraged at how much he's improved over the last couple of days. He was almost depressed for as energetic and as of a guy as he is. He was borderline depressed earlier this week because it was the first time he's had to go through this in his big league, short big league career. But he's seen some improvement over the last couple of days, so he remains cautiously optimistic. He's able to come off the DL on Monday. I don't think he'll do it quite that quickly, because I think he's going to have to hit for a couple of days and then go on a brief rehab assignment. But when the Blue Jays return home after the Washington series, next Thursday, it's possible that he would be ready to go for that series against the Astros.
Now, I just want to ask one big picture question. We talked either last week or week before just about the window and about this team, sort of the urgency for them to be in a win-now mode, and I kind of want to ask a related question of that. The AL East is really interesting because there's not a lousy team anywhere in the division, but there's also not a particularly terrific team anywhere in the division, and so even a team that's struggling and below 500 is very much in the mix. So I'm wondering, as the Blue Jays look at what they've got and look at the division, how do they kind of view their place within this division where nobody is really finding any consistent traction?
Yeah, and I mean, the start that the Blue Jays got off to this year was in some ways almost somewhat similar to what they went through in 2013. And in that case, they were buried in the division very early on, and you know, this is, if they started this year and really any of the past several years, it would have been a very similar case. I mean, you look at teams in the AL Central, you know, that have a record around the Blue Jays, and they're, you know, deep and very deep in the standings already. The Jays are very, very fortunate that they're still within striking distance, considering, you know, the first 6 weeks of the season didn't really go very well at all. But they're very much in that mix, and you know, that's, you know, even more of a case to make a push for it this year, because of that window of opportunity. You know, the AL East over, you know, the last couple of years, really, until, you know, Baltimore kind of took advantage of things last year, but they didn't get a strong out of the gate either. This entire window of opportunity that the Jays have had has really been kind of a focus, and that's why they really have to kind of zero in on. It's going to be interesting to see how Anthopoulos manages that, because he's trying to keep the window open for the future while also winning now, and that's a very difficult task to accomplish. But it does certainly provide some ammunition that if we get towards the end of June and the Blue Jays still find themselves within striking distance of first place, that you would think that they would make a push for it. And this year, unlike years past, it seems like they do have some money available at the deadline because they didn't spend a lot this offseason, with the exception of a backloaded contract to Russell Martin. So the funds are available. The question is how much of their young talent they're going to be willing to give up in the minor leagues in order to take that next step.
Rick, the O's are 20-23, three games under 500, with a +2 run differential, but they're 2.5 games behind a team that's not exactly a juggernaut. Is the glass half empty or half full?
I guess it would depend on who you talk to, really. I think what saves them is the fact that they're in a division that's not particularly strong. If you look at, you know, all across baseball, they look at the division winners, they are far and above that 500 mark, whereas in the AL East, they're all kind of fighting in that same area. So for them, I feel like the glass has to be half full because they're still in it despite everything that's happened. So I think if you're the Orioles, you got to feel good about where you are, but fans obviously aren't very happy with the performance, with the way things have gone, particularly the offense.
And I mean, at the risk of asking an overly simplistic question, what's going on with this offense? They're not scoring runs. They're not really hitting the ball out of the park. They're missing some guys, but there also seem to be some people underperforming.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, I wish I had a concrete answer. I don't think they do, to be honest with you. There's just a lot of guys, like you said, underperforming. And Chris Davis is probably the biggest one. I mean, he's got, I think, 65 strikeouts right around there. And, you know, he's going to be a high strikeout guy. You can forgive it if he's going deep a lot. He's not. So the batting average isn't there. Steve Pierce is another guy coming off a career year last year who they really depended on to have a big season. He's hitting about 190. So they're really kind of struggling. Anyone not named Adam Jones or Jimmy Paredes, who's been phenomenal for them, hasn't really gotten it together. I mean, last night they had 5 hits. 3 of those through Jimmy Paredes. They've only scored 7 runs in their last 40 innings. So I think there's a lot of pressing that goes on when these offenses start to struggle, certainly going on here with them. But in terms of pinpointing why they're underperforming, I just don't really have a good answer for you.
Is there anything move-wise that can be done aside from just getting healthy? Is there anybody waiting in the wings in the minors? Any tweaks, or is it just a matter of wait for guys to perform better and also, again, get healthy? Because that is part of what's going on here.
There's quite a whole lot that they can do in terms of tweaks, to be honest with you. You know, they've got Chris Parmalee down in AAA. He's an option. He's been hitting fairly well. Today they decided to designate Alejandro Deaza for assignment. So, you know, they feel like he was another guy who wasn't hitting. They feel like there's not a whole lot of massive changes that they can make right now. They've got to hope that Matt Wieter is coming back, which they hope is around June 4th, June 5th, will help spark something in this offense because they've got the pieces. They really didn't lose a whole lot outside of Nelson Cruz and Nick Markakis. They really need some of these other guys to step up. Travis Snyder really hasn't done what they thought he was going to do. And, you know, as a whole, the team has been underperforming. The fact that they're still in it and really a win streak away from being in first place, you know, it's pretty good, all things considered. Last year, they didn't make their run until June. So kind of circling back to your first question, I think that they're not really in panic mode right now, but obviously things could be a lot better for the Orioles.
You mentioned Deaza. I mean, he was a guy that was a really big part of their late run last year, a guy who has some interesting tools and a guy who has some upside on an offense that we've just been talking about for a few minutes could use some help. Are they just convinced he's done, or what was the thought process in parting ways with him? Again, a guy that was a big part of things last year.
He was. He was a little bit of a spark for them, I think, when they got him from Chicago in August. And I mean, he was striking out a lot. He wasn't able to put the ball in play like a lot of them are right now. And also, they have a crowded outfield. They've got a lot of outfielders, probably too many outfielders. Part of the move today, of course, is activating Ryan Flaherty. And given the issues that J.J. Hardy has had recently with his back, and given the fact that Ryan Flaherty has already tweaked his groin more than once, this was the second time on the DL with that injury, they just couldn't afford to be down an infielder right now. They wanted to keep Everett Cabrera, who everyone kind of assumed was going to be the guy to go. They needed him in case something happens in any of these games. Obviously, in an injury situation, you can call someone else, but in games, you need somebody immediately, and there's no way to predict what's going to happen with either one of those guys. So they felt like Deaza had just struggled really since day one, hasn't been able to get going, hasn't shown any signs of getting going. And this way they can kind of see what the interest is out there, potentially trade him and sort of move on because they do have a lot of outfielders.
As we talk about that infield mix and the guys they're doing without and the guys they have to prepare for doing without, one guy whose name just almost never seems to come up anymore is Jonathan Scope. This is a guy, you know, you mentioned in the spring as a potential significant contributor. He got off to a hot start. What's his status? Is he just kind of in a black hole right now?
Well, he's in the trouble list. He's down in the end of spring. He's been doing some baseball stuff, but, you know, you got to be careful. He's got a knee injury that he suffered last month, and really, with knees, you know, if it's not surgical, you got to be real careful that you rehab it right or it becomes surgical. So, you know, there's nothing really updated in terms of him actually getting in games or really starting to progress with his rehab at all, but, you know, he's somebody the Orioles feel like it could have right around the break. But again, you just don't know with knees. They want to be able to get it right. They feel like he was poised to have a career year. He was doing really well offensively. He's another guy who I think they missed a whole lot. Somebody who really had kind of should have taken control a little bit more in his second year at the plate. Right now, they've got to be without him, and that's why getting Ryan Flaherty back was so important for them. He's starting tonight in the infield. He's kind of been the replacement for Scope.
I'm going to miss this segment when we don't do it anymore, but we do get one more time at least. Matt Wieters is apparently really close. How close is he? What's the plan for the next week or so? What are we looking at as far as ceasing to do these weekly Matt Wieters updates?
Yeah, I'm going to miss me too. I don't think Matt will very much. He played in his first rehab game yesterday, and the plan is for him to play at Double A Bowie, which is where he was last night, again tomorrow and on Saturday. They have given some thought to him DHing in between those days. He's in the clubhouse today here with the Orioles. He said that he'd rather just kind of come up here, take some BP, continue to stay in baseball shape. So that's probably going to be the plan for him. I think you're looking at maybe one day next week he would play at an affiliate again and then hopefully rejoin the team. And again, it's going to be on an every other day basis. I asked him probably about an hour ago how they can progress to having him be that everyday guy. And right now he's still getting soreness in between starts. So they're going to continue to go off of feel. And once that soreness is out, once he's feeling better, they'll try to have him pick up a ball in between days he catches, do a little light toss, try to work up. But right now, for Matt Wieters and the Orioles, having him part-time is better than having him not at all.
And another guy that they are currently doing without, Bud Norris had a really rough first rehab start. From reading from a distance, it sounds like maybe he's starting to feel a little better, but how's he doing? Was that a matter of him still not being all the way right physically or just a rough game, or what's his situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point you have to deny the fact that he's been sick. I think his legs probably aren't under him now, too. I mean, anyone who's been sick for weeks at a time, you know that it wrecks you. And even when you're feeling better, you're still depleted. He still lost about 15 pounds, so I think he's kind of struggling to get his strength back on the mound. That's probably a lot of what you saw. He's going to make another rehab start for Double A Bowie. And in his place, though, they've done very well. Mike Wright has pitched really well. He's going to pitch again, get his third start tomorrow in the second game of that doubleheader. They're calling up Tyler Wilson to start that first game tomorrow. So they've had guys pitch well. I feel like it's unfortunate it is what's happened with Bud Norris, especially because he's coming off of that career year. It really hasn't hurt the pitching staff all that much. The rotation seems to really be coming around. It's the offense that's making it such a difficult atmosphere for them to play in.
Bill, we were not so long ago talking about good vibes and how the Rays were doing it, and since then they've hit a little bit of a roadblock against two teams that really you shouldn't be hitting a roadblock against. What's going on with the Rays here lately that their fortunes have kind of turned in the wrong direction a little bit?
Well, today it was a lot of King Felix. I mean, right at 100 pitches, he let him have four hits and just an immaculate little shutout against him. But, you know, their lineup is not real strong. They've lost and they've lost some of their pieces of that lineup, you know, in Loney, and Souza's out right now. You know, you just wonder how many more injuries these guys can take. But today makes five in a row they've lost.
And that does, you do kind of lead into, they're down so many guys. I mean, to some extent, the answer is just deal with it. But what do they do on this in this lineup to paper over the number of guys they're doing without right now?
Well, you know, it's funny because they seem to keep putting in the right guys and things are going well. But just like last night, you know, something you thought you could count on when you go to the seventh inning and you've got Jepson, McGee, and Boxberger lined up and you've got the lead, you like your chances. And then, of course, McGee and Boxberger both gave up home runs, crucial home runs. McGee a grand slam and Boxberger the game winner, you know, both to Kyle Seager. So, you know, even doing the right thing right now is not working.
Had a piece on Rays.com just here recently about the hard luck that Jake Odorizzi has dealt with. He's pitched awfully well and hasn't had a lot to show for it. He's not the only one, and so I kind of have a big picture question with him, and even to some extent Archer, though Archer's 5-4, or 5-5 now, I guess.
No, actually, what he extent... just lost today.
Sorry?
No, Boxberger took the loss.
Ah, yes. Anyway, these guys are pitching well, and although you know and I know that the win is a fairly archaic stat, pitchers care about it. To what extent does there become a worry about these guys getting too fine or getting frustrated or whatever it is that they continue to make good pitches and they continue to see their team not ending up winning behind them?
Well, I certainly can't get in their heads, but, human nature is human nature. You know, when you're getting, Odorizzi's case, he's getting like 1.6 runs per game. So that's a pretty fine margin to work with. And then when he gives up two runs in the first inning the other night, you know, he's probably sitting there going, I'm 0.4 over my allotted amount of runs, so I'm in trouble. There's an old saying about being in the good slot, and Odorizzi certainly isn't in it right now. But I do think that can work on your head. On the other hand, I think it can make you. I remember the old Cardinal teams in the '80s when they would win 2-1, 1-0 games. You know, it was just like those pitchers knew they just had to get it. You know. In that range, or they were not going to win. But I guess it can go both ways.
I kind of want to ask you something. I asked the same question of Brittany Giroli because her team is in kind of a similar position to the team you cover. The Rays are 500. They have a positive run differential, and they're one game back of a team that is not exactly a juggernaut itself in the Yankees. Given all the struggles here in this last week or so, is the glass half empty or half full for as far as the Rays are concerned?
You know, miraculously, I think they've kept it half full the whole, you know, thus far this year. And I think, just like you say, you know, the situation they're in, it reminds me a lot of the basketball game where, you know, you shoot 15% in the first half and you're 2 points behind. You know, you got to figure the luck is going to come back your way sooner or later. And they certainly are due some luck.
And one thing that's not luck that would be an awfully nice boost is Matt Moore continues to get closer. Where is he at, and how are the reports looking on him right now?
He's supposed to have a session tomorrow down in Fort Myers. And after that, you know, they'll reevaluate. Of course, you know, one of the things to be cautiously optimistic about on this thing, too, is once he comes back, how many innings is he going to be able to give him? And to me, that's probably their biggest crisis point right now is what happens when the Erasmo Ramirez and Alex Colomé pitch and only give you 3 to 5 innings and the toll that takes on the bullpen. So, you know, the general attrition of having that situation. So if Moore comes back, it's going to be, you know, the same type of situation.
Speaking of the injuries, and you touched on this briefly, but one guy they are going to do without for a while is James Loney. What exactly is his time frame?
Well, right now it's a 15-day DL, but you think with a fractured finger it could be a little bit longer than that. I have not seen him since the injury, so I really haven't had a chance to talk to him about, you know, the extent of the fracture, but, you know, I suspect that to go further than 15.
And then one more thing, and I'll let you go to follow on that. We currently on the Rays.com depth chart have Logan Forsyth listed at top at first base. That's interesting. You know, we've been talking about the ways they get these guys in the lineup. Is that a way to get a hot bat into the lineup and maybe find a way not to miss Loney as much as they might otherwise?
I think so, although you can't put a price on Loney's glove over there. But Forsythe certainly has been one of the nice surprises at the bat. So, but, you know, he's just not the same over there at first. No, nobody really is the same at first as Loney.
Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras.